Welcome to the BBC Music Magazine podcast. I'm the magazine's editor, Oliver Condy, and with me in the studio today are managing editor Rebecca Franks and editorial assistant Freya Parr.
Hello.
Hi.
So before we get started, do head out and buy your copy of the February issue, which is out now. Better still, if you fancy subscribing, we've got a special discount for our podcast listeners. All of you can now get 30% off every six issues, which takes the cost to just £25.15. You can claim the offer by visiting buysubscriptions.com/musicpodcast. So, before we take a look at what's actually in the February issue, let's find out what's been going on in the classical music world. So yes, it's time for music news. Freya, you're going to kick off this month.
Yeah, so I've got some fun stats to kick us off this month.
Hooray.
The BPI.
I love
a good number. So the UK's Record Label Association, the BPI, has released a whole bunch of statistics on the streams and sales of classical music from the last year. And there's been just over a 10% increase from classical music, which has outperformed the 5.7% rise in UK music consumption generally. So it's quite significant more, because actually 5.7 is still pretty good. Streaming has increased too as part of that, but at a much slower rate than CD sales, which seem to still be 60%, I think it is, of most classical music consumption, which is interesting. So
it's a good news story.
Yes.
I think the classical music fraternity is always going to be fond of its physical product.
Yes.
But at the same time, streaming is such a convenient medium.
Mm.
I mean, going home and actually not having to get a physical product out and put it on a player to play anything is one of the things that exploded so much, certainly for me, in the last couple of years. I mean, in the last 12 months, I've almost changed completely my listening habits.
Yeah. I use streaming a lot for kind of discovering new music, actually, and trying out things, because you can sample things really easily. But I think there is still, as you say, there's people still like a physical product, and the booklet notes that often will give you an insight into the artist or to the context of the piece of music. I think that's such an integral part of a classical CD.
It's a great way of introducing people to classical music as well, particularly through kind of playlist culture. But it can, or I always find it very difficult to search for things through streaming services, because there's so many different versions. And often
the metadata is still pretty bad.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, you try and search for a version. I mean, I've got one of those assistants, one of those smart assistants at home, and, you know, trying to search for a particular recording of a Tchaikovsky symphony is impossible. And actually, as Richard Morrison says in this issue, that he's actually mourning the demise of the booklet note, because if you are listening on streaming, there's no way of finding out about it unless you go online and actually actively search. But yeah.
Well, there's one streaming service that do the, I don't know what it is, but they do the booklet notes as
Cobas.
Part of it. That one.
And Naxos Music Library,
which
you can stream on, they do the booklet notes as well.
Because they're much more important than with other musical genres, I think, the booklet notes for classical music. So,
Stats. But good news story. And I think it's just really now how the industry continues to make money, continues to make a profit from streaming.
Yes,
good news. My story is rather less good news. The death of Jean Joubert, composer of South African birth, died at the age of 91. But I mean, an incredible legacy, particularly of choral music. I've certainly enjoyed performing his works over the years. Academic, worked up in the University of Hull, and it's where he wrote this gorgeous anthem, "There Is No Rose," which we're going to hear a clip from now. That was an extract from There Is No Rose, performed by the Choir of Gloucester Cathedral, conducted by Adrian Partington, and that's on a Priory disc, which is the choral music of Jean Joubert.
Yes, it's sad, because actually recently there was a flourishing of interest in his music for his 90th birthday, which included four new recordings, I think one from Wells Cathedral, of his choral music, and the premiere of his opera, Jane Eyre. So, yes, yeah, so sad that there was just this really recent flourishing of interest.
Yes, an incredible composer, huge legacy. And I think we're going to really sort of start, you know, as one always does when composers die, when they pass, you know, there's a renewed interest in their music. And so hopefully a lot of his music will now resurface. So this month we announced the nominations of the BBC Music Magazine Awards, which you can find online on our website at classical-music.com. So to kick us off with our discussions of what's been nominated, here's a quick extract of all three nominations in the instrumental category.
So that was just three short snippets from the recordings nominated in the instrumental category. We heard the pianist Alexander Melnikov playing Debussy on the Harmonia Mundi label, guitarist Sean Schieber playing Steve Reich on Delphian Records, and Víkingur Ólafsson playing Bach, and that's on Deutsche Grammophon. And that's one of the seven categories in the BBC Music Magazine Awards 2019. And you can vote now for your favourite discs at our website, classical-music.com/awards. And that closes on the 19th of February. So this is really the result of quite a long behind the scenes process that we've had listening to all the discs that were given 5 stars in the magazine last year. We had a great day with our jury, who cover everything, the specialists and everything from medieval chant up to notes written far more recently in the last year or two, and had to have a lot of discussion and debate to choose these shortlists, which we're very proud of, and we'd love to hear which discs are your favourites.
Yes, there's a huge amount of variety, actually, isn't there? I mean, just having a look at the chamber nominations, there's Bassewitz chamber music, there's a solo recital by Patricia Kopaczynskaya, and Debussy Late Works. I mean, there's it's a huge amount of variety in there, and I think it's, I mean, I would hate to have to choose between a lot of them because, I mean, it sounds very cliched, but they're kind of all winners, aren't they?
They absolutely are, and I think that's definitely how our jury felt.
Yes, so do go and vote.
Yeah, so it's classical-music.com/awards, and, well, it's open now for your votes. So go along and click. This month's magazine. So don't forget our website at classical-music.com, where you can read about all the latest music happenings, read thousands of reviews, enjoy our free download of the week, and a good deal more. Plus, we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and we have an iPad edition available on the App Store. Riches indeed, and do sign up to our newsletter via the website. So let's carry on with the show. And as a quick precursor to talking about what's in the actual magazine, here's a clip from our gorgeous cover CD, a recording of beautiful 20th century songs, including Finzi's song cycle, Earth and Air and Rain, performed by BBC New Generation artist Ashley Riches and pianist Anna Tilbrook. So let's hear the opening song, Summer Schemes.
When friendly summer calls again, a little fivers to these hills. We'll go we two to that arched fane of leafage where they prime their bills before they start to flood the plain with quavers, minims, shakes and trills.
So that was Ashley Riches and Anna Tilbrook performing Summer Schemes from Gerald Finzi's song cycle, Earth and Air and Rain, written sort of pre-war. So beautiful, sort of bittersweet song cycle. I adore Finzi's music. And we've also got music by Manuel de Falla, Serrano, Obrador, and a good deal more. On the cover of this month's magazine is pianist James Rhodes, a very sort of a provocative artist, interesting, fascinating individual, very talented pianist, and very passionate about the way that he presents his programmes. So it's been fascinating to have him sit down and be interviewed by John Evans in what is a very revealing interview, actually. His thoughts about concert going and the way that people enjoy concerts and the way that artists present concerts is a theme that's always worth exploring, and he does it in a very interesting way. So that's really worth talking about. I've been to a few James Rhodes concerts, and he's absolutely fascinating to watch. The audience is hanging on his every word and every note.
Really seems to have this ability to communicate powerfully with his audiences.
Yes.
Mm. And his books are incredible. I've read both of his books, and they hit you very intensely. He's got a miraculous way with words that completely paint a picture. So I think he's just as good as words as he is with notes. But yeah, it was fascinating seeing it all from his perspective with John. So,
and also the fact that music has really, saved him. Music has really brought him out of a very dark place, a very, very uneasy childhood. And music is something that he's been able to use to work through his various sort of mental health issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard not to be in awe of his sheer courage, I find, because, he was abused as a child, and the trauma led to ongoing mental illness, and he's had that huge fight in court to be given the right to publish his story. So sort of just in terms of, as I say, the sheer courage and grit and determination, but to be out there in the world telling his story, twinned with this utter passion for the great composers, for Bach, for Rachmaninoff, for Chopin, for Beethoven, for that to not be undiluted. It makes him a really fascinating individual, I think.
You hear so much about the kind of cliche of the healing power of music, but he is proof that music can be completely healing and can, the struggle he has to get on stage, but it is clearly worth it. And he's actually curated a playlist for us as well, so have a listen. He's got all of his kind of favourite works that have really impacted him over the years that is on our Spotify page.
Oh, that's interesting, because in his books he also always sort of wants to point people towards playlists and to go and listen to music and to take part in it. And actually, he's advocated before for taking half an hour to bring some creativity into your life each day. Mm. So you don't just sit and watch TV. You might actually sit down and try and play the piano or learn something. And that passionate belief, I think, is very inspiring.
Mm. Definitely.
So, Freya, talking of gritty and challenging, we're going to talk about a rather wonderful recording of the month.
Yes. So let's kick off with hearing an extract from it, and then I'll go into a bit more detail. This is from a record of Lutoslawski's Symphonies No. 1, 4 and Je Venetienne. That was a mouthful. Performed by the Finnish Radio Symphony Orchestra under Hannu Lintu. And we're going to listen to the finale from Symphony No. 1. That was the finale from Lutoslawski's Symphony No. 1 from the recording by the Finnish Radio Symphony Orchestra with Hannu Lintu on the Ondine label. This is a great introduction to his orchestral writing if you're unfamiliar with him. The sound quality throughout is sublime and it's an excellent interpretation. The First Symphony in particular is often sort of forgotten about and was one of the first major Polish work to be banned under Stalin's leadership. So it's got fantastic history to it as well.
I was in awe by Lutoslawski's orchestrations, actually, the textures that he manages to get.
And it's not nearly as kind of challenging as you would think.
No.
It's very approachable. I mean, it's, as you can hear, a lot, but it's dynamic and it's really great. It's a really good disc to listen to, so I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, and Hannu Lintu is a wonderful, vibrant conductor. I mean, it always seems to get so much passion from the orchestra and so much, there's a lot of drama in that recording.
Follow it.
So, Rebecca, what have you got for us this month from the magazine?
Well, I think it's a bit of light relief, really. It's our piece called Divas Behaving Badly, which is a brilliant piece by Dr. Alexandra Wilson about how opera singers of the 1920s although were finding themselves challenged by the new jazz, film and sports stars who were vying for celebrity status. And so this is a very lively and colourful look at how they tried to stay in the limelight. It's got some great anecdotes. For example, there was the soprano Frida Hempel, who chartered a plane to London so her dog could visit the vet. Luisa Tetrazzini, she had an unpaid tax bill, which landed her in some hot water. So she paid all £1,500 of it in £5 notes and then gave the tax man a slice of homemade Christmas pudding just to go with it as well. So it's... It's full of tales of kind of bad behaviour, people pushing the boundaries, trying to court the limelight with gossip and glamour and all the everything that you could hope for, really.
But it's quite funny because, you know, history really repeats itself. You know, you have a lot of stories, you know, a lot of fabricated stories of sopranos doing things or tenors doing things to get into the press. And lo and behold, you know, 100 years later, you've got exactly the same. There wasn't that story of the violinist who allegedly lost their violin. It was stolen from a taxi. It was ended up being completely fabricated. And so there was this sort of worldwide search, find such and such's violin, when in fact it wasn't missing all the time. I think the record industry, the record label in question, just shoved it in a cupboard for an afternoon. So I think, you know, and all these sort of presenting, record contracts to nuns behind bars in a Carmelite monastery, you know, all those kind of gimmicks that really sort of give a story a bigger spin than they necessarily deserve. It's a good bit of fun, isn't it?
It is. And I think there's still that big appetite, definitely, for opera singers today to kind of spice up everyday life definitely. A little bit. You know, you think of Anna Netrebko, she's got this Instagram account, which if you've not followed, you definitely should, because it's kind of the diva lifestyle, exactly as you would imagine.
Yeah.
So now we're going to talk about the discs we've discovered this month in First Listen. So I'm going to kick off this month with a discovery I've made on the Warner Classics label. It's a recording called Chaplin's Smile, and it's music by Charlie Chaplin. So most people obviously know him as the Hollywood actor, silent film star, but not many people know him as quite a talented composer. Although I'm not entirely sure that he could necessarily read music and score music, but he did have a remarkable ear for melody and worked with some of Hollywood's greatest arrangers and composers to put together some of the greatest, to put together some really quite arresting soundtracks for many of his films. And this is a delightful tribute to Charlie Chaplin by violinist Philippe Quint with pianist Marta Aznavourian. And it's just a delightful kind of collection of bonbons, really, and arrangements of Chaplin's sort of most delightful melodies. This particular one is called Mandolin Serenade and features a guest appearance from Joshua Bell. And it was written originally for the film A King in New York, one of his lesser-known films from 1957. In fact, it wasn't actually shown in America until 1973. But it's a delightful piece of music, and I just loved the passion and the delight that comes through. So that was Philippe Quint and Joshua Bell performing Mandolin Serenade by Charlie Chaplin with pianist Marta Aznavourian. And that's a new recording on the Warner Classics label. Freya, what have you brought in for us this month?
I've brought something slightly more familiar. It's a recording of Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake, and it's actually the original 1895 version, which doesn't actually get recorded a huge amount. And it's by the State Academic Symphony Orchestra of Russia with Vladimir Jurovsky. And this recording has sort of opened a bit of a can of worms for me in rediscovering ballet scores. And it's a live recording and it's just really beautiful. We're going to listen to the Andante from the Act One Pas de Deux. Yes, that was from the Act One Pas de Deux from Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake. And I just think it's beautiful. It's kind of, obviously, because it's a live recording, it's slightly imperfect in moments, but it's just perfectly imperfect. And because it's not, when you see the ballet live, often the kind of rhythms are quite generous in terms of like they've got to allow the dancers to move. But this is purely just the music for the sake of music. And the recording quality is superb. And it's just really impactful stuff and just reminded me of what a beautiful score it is.
What label's it on?
It's on Pentatone.
They've always got a great sort of sense of sound as well.
Yeah.
Actually, from the very start, they were one of the first to really sort of embrace the SACD technology. And I think they've really taken that sort of tradition and carried it on, really. Mm. I mean, the sound quality is central to what they do.
Yeah, particularly as it's a live recording. It's really impressive and it's very atmospheric, the whole thing. Loved it.
Rebecca?
So I have brought along a disc on Naxos, which is of the American composer Florence Price. And I think she's a composer whose name will be familiar to regular listeners of our podcast, as we did a feature on her last year. So she's a 20th century American composer, and her music is starting to be sort of played a lot more and recorded after a whole load of her scores, handwritten scores, were discovered fairly recently. And this disc features her first and fourth symphonies. It's actually the world premiere recording of the Fourth Symphony, which was written in 1945, but only premiered last year by the Fort Smith Symphony and conductor John Jetta, who appear on this disc as well. So I think anyone who's heard her first symphony, which was the 1933 piece that kind of really brought her to national attention in her lifetime, won a prize. It was performed by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. I think they'll enjoy this Fourth Symphony as well, which was written, to say, in 1945. And we're going to hear an extract from the Juba Dance, which is the third movement. So that was the Juba Dance, which was the third movement of Florence Price's Fourth Symphony in D minor. And yeah, it's just a really enjoyable recording and it's great to see her music being given a good performance, you know.
Yeah, you're right. Because sometimes with composers that are lesser known or have been lesser known, there are only a handful of recordings, some of which could be quite weak. So it's nice to have good quality recordings coming through of composers that really should be given more of a platform.
Definitely. And I really hope we start to hear more of her music in more of her symphonies performed in concert as well.
So that brings us to the end of the February edition of our podcast. Join us next month when we'll be talking about the March issue. So from us, it's goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
The BBC Music Magazine Podcast.